The new year is here, and it's the perfect time to kickstart your meditation practice. The Morning Meditation for Women podcast has short, daily guided meditations that will help you start your day with intention and focus, and make it so easy to get you into the habit. Imagine feeling so much more calm and confident in 2025. Follow and listen to Morning Meditation for Women on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring. Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
It's Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saul Tlamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Lucas Giolito, what do I say? What do I say right now?
What do we say?
No, what do
What's
I
going
say?
On? What do I you say?
I say there's no human being I'd rather be talking to.
Oh, right yeah. Now. I'm going to remember that one of these. There's no human being I'd rather be talking to.
Oh, see, I get that.
Rob Radford.
That's why I say it, so that you'll say that those kind words.
There you
thank
go.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's always a good time. Last time we talked, I had to do it in a makeshift ballroom at the, where was that? The GM meetings,
yeah.
Meetings. Since then, there's been the winter meetings. Since then, there's been a lot of months. Since then, there's been a lot of stuff going on. But most importantly, other than get some good tattoo talk, which we're going to get to.
Yeah.
You didn't think I was going to do it. But I did it. I did it.
Wait, so the picture you sent me is yours, not Joe's?
No. They're basically the same. His is just a little bit bigger.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't want to. I honestly felt bad. Like it took. What's the longest it took for any of your tattoos?
My leg. That one took 5 hours, six
Whoa.
Hours, maybe.
What?
Four wow. and a half, five, something like that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. No, this wasn't that long, but I didn't want to push my luck. I took the smaller version. It's not that much smaller. It just looks smaller because my bicep's bigger. I've reached full muscle capacity. Before we get to other stuff, people are asking how you are. Like, I just want to cut to the chase, right? So there's I want to have a recording of you saying, I am here. I am doing this. I feel like I will be ready for this.
Yeah.
Right? So please, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm in Fort Myers, obviously continuing the rehab progression, which is at this point, kind of coming out of the rehab progression, throwing off the mound soon. Me and Garrett, we're on the same program. I'm going to be ready for full spring training in a full season. So, I find it funny when I see the stuff online saying that I'll be coming back in June. I don't know where that came from. I have no idea. I asked a lot of people. No one really knows. So at this point, it's all right, cool. That's fine. Whatever people want to think. But no, everything's going great. I look forward to a full year.
I do. I'm not going to lie to you. This is why I wanted to ask you that question, because I saw these same things. It's like these graphics, a lot of graphics, right? When you trade for Crochet and then you sign Bueller and you have the other guys and they're like, and then there's little print, Lucas Giolito in also, later in the year, whatever. And I'm saying this, I'm here to build you up. It's a compliment. All this is a compliment. So I'm here because every one of our conversations has been exact opposite, have been more of exactly what you said, which is, yeah, things are going well. I'm throwing. I'm going to be ready for spring training. I'm going to be ready for the year. That's that. Right? Am I wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. If things, we've added pieces to the rotation, the young guys are doing great. if I'm in a position where I need to like compete for a rotation spot, I'm ready to do so. You know, that's not something I've had to do for a few years. I've been very lucky, but considering the talent that we have in our rotation, if I'm like competing for the fifth spot or sixth spot, however they want to do it, all right, great. But I'll be ready for that. So I'm not, you know, I all the noise online is pretty funny. But you know, it doesn't make a difference at the end of the day. Like once we all get out to spring training, we're all working. We're all working towards the same goal. So
yeah, I don't think you're competing. That's my guess. I think, but so when you, what does that look like for you? Like you said, and thank you for the update right now. In God bless you. You're in Florida. Holy mackerel. The weather's so bad, here. but you're throwing, and then so on, I think it's like February 12th or something. Spring training doesn't start. I don't care when you throw a baseball. It doesn't start until the media is let in the clubhouse. So I think that's like February 13th. I don't know what that, February 12th, February 13th. So what, but and you know, you're going to have to do that thing, you know, where you like everyone comes and everyone talks to you. We're getting ahead of that. But when that day happens, it's like, okay, no, I'm going to be on field one. I'm going to be whatever. I'm just throwing. I've been through a million of these spring trainings. Let's go. Let's let it rip. Right. That's what it's going to be like, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah. The throwing program, the progression puts me like right there for spring training and all that build up during spring to, you know, come out early in the year. Usually guys in this day and age, you're not like coming out throwing 8 or 9 innings, in first turn through the rotation, but it's like that 5, 6. And then it's kind of that gradual build up. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure if someone comes out of the gate real hot and their pitch counts down, then, you know, CG's possible.
Wow. Listen, and this is really all the plan all along. It felt like it anyway. Like everyone freaks out over timetables. It freaks out over timetables. You know, yeah, as I said, the Zero Dark 30. I know you guys freak out over certainty. You ever see Zero Dark 30?
I have not seen it.
Oh,
I downloaded it to my iPad to watch on the plane, but then I watched other movies instead. Oh. I watched, on the plane yesterday, I watched Zone of Interest.
What is that?
It's about like a Nazi general trying to create like the perfect home with his wife, literally right outside of Auschwitz. And so it's a deeply moving film. I think it won in like 23. It won Best Foreign Film. And it was nominated for Best Picture. You don't see any of the atrocities, you hear them. So it's like the Blair Witch Project of
World War II.
Yeah, so you're hearing what's going on over the wall while like you have scenes of like, you know, this like evil dude's wife trying to like tend to the garden and things like that. That was a pretty moving, pretty sad watch for sure.
Are you a movie guy?
Yes.
Ooh.
Film and television. Yeah.
I think this may be, the spawning of the Lucas Giolito movie review. how many stars would you give that out of 10?
I liked it. It's not the most happens during the movie. It's like less of like a plot driven movie and more of like I'm trying to think of the right words to describe it. Like, it's more of just like capturing a moment in time.
Yeah.
So I'd probably give it like 8.
Okay. Ooh, that's pretty good. Yeah. What would you give? Did you see Gladiator 2?
I did.
What would you give that? So this is going to be my context.
Gladiator 2, I would give like a 6.5 to 7.
That's exactly where excellent. Your instincts are keen.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Gladiator 1. I went into Gladiator 2 knowing it wouldn't be as good, but it was highly entertaining. I felt like the plot at times felt a little rushed. I felt like, you know, the like things driving the narrative were like just happening like kind of crazy. I would have appreciated maybe some more scenes of just like dialogue and exhibition kind of setting things up. But I thought the performances were great, especially Denzel. He was fantastic.
Oh, he was great. Yeah. Let me give you the biggest flaw in that movie before we get to other stuff. We can come back to movies. It's fine. But the biggest flaw in that movie, it would be when they speak, whether it's in the Coliseum or at the very end, on the road, it'd be the equivalent of Alex Cora speaking to the entire team from field one and you standing, at the tropical smoothie cafe or whatever a mile and a half away and yeah. You're reacting to like there's no megaphone, there's no microphone. It's a very real problem that it like has been bothering me for about a month.
So that's the thing, those types of movies you have to like suspend disbelief.
I know, I refuse it's to like, do that though.
Yeah, like the final scene, I'm not going to give away spoilers, but when he's addressing two armies on yeah, either side.
They're like, all reacting.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably hear maybe like the first 10 rows of dudes on either side can hear what he's saying.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah. So anyway, this is what we're going to do in Fort Myers, all right? We're going to go to an empty movie theater, and we're going to film it like the old Ebert and Siskel and Ebert, right? Three-camera shoot. All right. So as we said, a lot has happened. Really, for you, like, it must have been interesting where you do everything you possibly can for Max Fried, your buddy, as you said, your gaming partner or whatever, to say, hey, listen, the Red Sox are a cool place to be. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work out. And there's probably the initial, frustration or whatever, because you want your buddy to play with you, right? I mean, that's not any news flash.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? You're right on track for sure.
Yeah. And so, first of all, how did he tell you? Did he tell you first or how's that work?
Yeah. No, he gave me a call immediately, like before anything went public.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. So it was, I appreciate that he did that for sure, because, you know, it's kind of like finding out things on Twitter or Instagram before, your agent calls you or whatever. It's a similar type situation. So I appreciate that from him for sure. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, you can't blame him for his decision. That was, you know, he made the best decision for him, his family. He's going to a great organization. So, yeah, good for him.
Did you try talking him out of it?
There's no talk. There's no talking out of it. You can't talk someone out of $218 million.
Hold on. Let me write that down. But then your team, the Red Sox, trade for a guy you played with.
Yeah.
Garrett Crochet, my interactions with him have been great. Seems like a very nice guy. It seems like you get along with him.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Garrett's great. Very kind. Just a really good dude, down to earth. Really works his ass off. I mean, as everybody could see from last year, transitioning, from, you know, injuries to then bullpen and then starter, and he became an elite left-handed starter. So, you know, I think he's only going to get better, stronger. Really excited to have him on the team to help lead the staff.
But that must have been, because it was only what? It was like 2 days in between or something like that. It wasn't that long. And so for you, it was, and not only, you know, listen, you want your team to be good, and that was one of the impetuses behind having Max in the team, but also just having someone that you know just helps. I mean, that you get along with helps. So when it comes to Garrett, what is the thing when you hear you're trading for this guy from your perspective, having played with him, take us inside to the inside to the inside. What is the thing that you're like, hey, this is what you're going to learn about this guy, other than being a very nice guy and having a Baseballs and Boring t-shirt?
You know, what's funny is I feel like I'm going to have some stuff to learn, because the last time I played with him was like when he was coming off of Tommy John and, you know, coming back from that kind of injury and, you know, dealing with setbacks and things like that, it can kind of put you in a different mental place. You know, I saw that, but the one thing he always maintained was his determination of becoming a starting pitcher. Even when the organization he used to play for showed doubts, he always like internally was like, no, that's what I'm going to be doing. And I'm going to be doing it at an extremely high level. I didn't get to witness it firsthand, except for when he pitched against us last year. But I'm looking forward to seeing his process, his work ethic. I've heard amazing things. He came into spring training last year with the White Sox. I obviously wasn't there, but hearing about it, like a man with his hair on fire. He was locked in. He was getting extremely good work done, very motivated. And I'm sure now he's going to maintain that and then some, you know, coming to the Red Sox where we have a real chance to do something in the AL East. So that's what I'm most excited for. Just a guy that takes it seriously, works really hard. And then obviously the stuff on top of it is like the elite of the elite. So it's awesome.
It is like the, you know, being around Lucas, and I know that you've only been Boston, and I think that any team you play for, you want to be perceived as part of the big boys club, right? In terms of player acquisition. And, mm-hmm. and that was a big boy move, man. Like it just was. Like you just, to go back to everyone compares it to the Chris Sale trade, same deal. Like these GMs don't like giving up prospects. I mean, mm-hmm. We could say, oh, well, the guy's never played in the major leagues and you don't know what he's going to be. But they see all the good in all these prospects much more than anybody else because they draft them, they develop them, all of that. So
teams value prospects and draft picks at an extremely high level, probably higher than ever before in the history of baseball.
Right.
So you're 100% spot on. Like GMs, they value their prospects. Making trades involving top level prospects is always a tough thing to do. You know, especially if it's, you know, prospects that were like drafted by that GM and nurtured within the organization, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, credit to Brez on that one, man. Like, you know, just missed on Max and then immediate pivot, made a huge splash. And then followed it up by signing Walker as well. I really like where our rotation's at.
You know what? Another thing I like the, and this again, you mentioned Walker, Buehler. I like the been there, done that mentality too. Like you've done it. And why, like obviously Garrett has some to prove, but if you're going to have that guy who has something to prove, you have that, if you have that high end of potential, you can deal with it. But the been there, done there, that thing with that Walker allows, that you allow, we saw it, man. Like it is something that I don't think front offices value enough. And I'm hoping that front offices and this front office also keep valuing it because it's proven, right? I mean, it's fine to have young players. It's cool. That's great. But the been there, done that, the mentality of getting 100 through 162 and then getting through a postseason and all of that, I don't know. I'm just ranting. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, I give him credit to Walker. He's done a lot more been there, done that than I have. He's got two World Series rings. So,
but excelling through a Major League Baseball season.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's a lot that goes into that, obviously, bringing in experience and wisdom and all those good things. You can help, lead the younger guys, especially if they might be going through a rough patch or something like that, keeping confidence high, maintaining a good energy in the clubhouse. Those are all kind of like intangible things that I think a lot of people don't necessarily look at, when, you know, someone's building like their dream roster, you know, they're just looking at numbers. They're looking at, oh, this player can do this. This player can do that. This player can do that. But as far as having the right kind of vibe in the clubhouse, the right kind of guys to pick each other up, you know, over the course of a very long season, you know, the longest professional season in,
yeah, it's long.
in American sports. I think I'm right on that. Is that correct?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
we play the most games.
Yeah, and there's no, and listen, there's no better way to prepare for it than staying in Fort Myers for an extra 4 months too. So, I mean,
hey, it works out great for me. I get to work out, work out with the other guys that are down here, and we get to motivate each other.
I love it.
Medical staff down here is excellent. You know, shout out to Kevin down here, our PT. So yeah, it's been nice.
Word association, 6-man rotation, which is another thing that came up. What's your thoughts? No bad thoughts.
I don't love 6-man rotations. I feel like when I'm in a good groove of that 4-day rest period, that feels right for me personally. If, you know, a team, whether it be the Red Sox or any other team I were to play for, were to be like, okay, we're doing a 6-man rotation, like, I'm not going to be like holding a picket sign, like, oh no, I don't want it. You know, if it benefits the team, if they see that as the best way to go, like, I get it. I know the Dodgers are doing that. So we'll see how it goes, but you know, I generally like to have 4 days of rest. That feels right to me. Sometimes you get those 5 days of rest with rainouts or off days, and that can be nice, but to do that over and over again, and then those 5 days of rest with a rainout or off day are now turning into 6 days of rest because you're on a 6-man rotation, that just feels a little long. So yeah, I mean, we'll see. We all adapt to everything. Everybody adapted to the shot clock. So if 6-man rotation is the way they want to go, then everybody can adapt to it.
I know that when I was broadcasting spring training games, I adapted. I couldn't go to the bathroom. You missed a half inning.
Yeah, for real.
When that first started in that spring training, I'm like, holy crap, this is going by quick.
Yeah.
Before I ask you the next thing, am I getting you excited to play baseball? I mean, by talking baseball?
Or are
you?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I'm just making sure. I'm here to motivate. Slow the heart rate, throw the cougar in the car. You got that reference?
No.
Talladega Nights.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
How are we gonna do a movie review if you haven't seen any movies?
I've seen Talladega Nights. I said I haven't seen it in so long. I've probably seen it like 5 times.
I'm sorry.
I'm not a movie quote guy. I know that a lot of baseball players you've probably met over the years, like, can just rattle off movie quotes.
They can.
Really?
I was holding you to higher standards.
Dude, when I was in the minor leagues, that was like 60% of conversation was just like dudes yelling out movie quotes from Will Ferrell movies.
Well, that was a scene where Ricky Bobby's father throws a cougar in the car and he says lower the heart rate, which I just thought was great. All right. So we workshopped this when we were doing the Max Fried recruiting pitch. I'm going to give you another opportunity. I am somebody else. I am Cam Newton. Did you see this?
Yeah.
All right. I am Cam Newton. Because you are so excellent at podcasts, you have been invited on the fourth and whatever podcast with Cam Newton. Cam Newton has just said that baseball is a dying sport, that in 20 years, the WNBA will be more popular, which is, here's my take, is that, you know, this is a quick aside. No knock on the WNBA. If you had to pick a league in 2024 that had the greatest strides, it would have been the WNBA.
For sure.
I think that's right.
For sure. Right? I agree.
I mean, but still, I mean, we could say that when soccer gets the bump from the World Cup, whatever it is. I'm being protective of baseball. I don't want to muddy the waters. I want you to talk. I'm Cam Newton. I just said that. What would your response be?
I'd probably go like this. Like, you're trying to get a bunch of people riled up and clicks, and I mean, that's like the game now. You know, you want to get your sound bite, you want to get your likes and your clicks and your comments. I don't know, dude. It's not, I don't think that's a real statement. I think that's just someone that's talking that doesn't really know what's going on in that world. Like, I'm not going to make any comments about football to Cam Newton because he knows football like 1,000% better than I do. So, you know, I kind of just disregard that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just talked to, you just did one with Adam Ottavino, and I think he said it. It's like Cam Newton probably has never, it's not his, not watched baseball at all. And I guess what I'm saying is that not to, what that did was allow for a conversation, which is fine. It's great, right? Mm-hmm. It's an extreme conversation, and you can take the conversation to the WNBA, to Caitlin Clark, to take to all that stuff. And then, but the other part of the conversation is, what we also have to understand is that baseball, if we're saying 2024, if we're going to go through the leagues that took steps forward, baseball absolutely took a step forward. You know how I know? They just signed a guy for $800 million, you know?
So, yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I think the popularity of baseball is relatively stable right now. You know, you have some superstars, especially Shohei Ohtani. I mean, just so dynamic. Yeah, I think we're in a pretty good place, not going to lie. It's, you know, the thing is, baseball is, it's a very intricate sport. So I think that most baseball fans, they kind of grew up with it, and then they understand the game. For like a random person to just watch a baseball game for the first time, they're gonna be like, what the fuck is going on? What is this? Like, it's 3 hours long. I don't know. You know, they're trying to make it shorter. I get that. That's why we have the shot clock and everything now, but, I'm not too concerned with like the health of baseball right now. I think we're probably good at least for the next 20 years, without having to do anything drastic. Yeah, that's kind of my take on it. I don't think that it's too big of a deal. I think that making it more accessible in kind of today's day and age of like streaming and the internet is hugely important. The TV deals and everything, those are kind of becoming very archaic. It doesn't really make too much sense anymore. You know, having blackouts in your home city, these are things we've been discussing. We've talked about that in meetings before. So I'm hoping that, you know, the leagues and the media companies can kind of figure out a better way in kind of today's day and age. But that's just for accessibility. I mean, you want to make it as accessible as possible.
No, it's true. It's again, a year ago, we wouldn't have said, oh my goodness, Netflix is going to have Christmas Day games. NFL games. Like, we have to adjust. We have to adjust. That's, I hopefully that's what we're doing here. Which, by the way, another thing that came up was, you know, the Manfred, starters have to go five or six, or the toying with that idea, the five or six innings thing. Which Brian Bannister came on this podcast and he had a more palatable answer to that, which was, if you don't do that, maybe there's you lose a DH later in the game or something. I don't know. I get where they're coming from, Lucas. Like, it's injuries. It's wanting starters, pitchers like yourself. I get the Lucas Giolito ticket. That's something. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that either.
The minimum innings pitch for a starter?
Yeah.
So my thing is, like, what if the starter goes out and doesn't have it that day and he's thrown 45 pitches in the first inning? Yeah. It doesn't happen too often, but like, what do you do in that situation? Like, can you create like a safety net where if a starting pitcher has thrown over 50 pitches or 40 pitches in an inning, like,
that's a good one.
Then you're allowed to take them out.
Yeah.
Cause especially because of the shot clock, doing that and throwing 40 plus pitches in an inning is extremely taxing. And then once your body gets really tired and your mechanics break down and you're still throwing at maximum effort, trying to get big league hitters out, you're putting yourself at a high risk of injury. So I don't, trust me, I love the idea of starters pitching deep in games. I don't think I would necessarily mind that rule being implemented at all, but I think you need to create safety nets.
I like that. See, we're getting to a place where this is palatable, honestly. So that's what we're going to do. That's the goal for 2025. Where's the book? Where's the book? You were so kind to have product placement for a damn near perfect game, co-authored by Joe Kelly and myself, in your locker room. Admittedly, not having read it, but still.
No, I've read many portions of it. I did. I promise.
Wait, so let's compare that to watching a movie. I've watched many portions of that movie.
Yeah. It's right. Like, yeah, I've seen clips of that movie on YouTube.
Hey, I gotta be honest with you. No, if you're gonna prioritize things, A, the product placement you had in your locker was elite. B, if you read any of it, I would implore you to read the rest of it just to, again, it should be like something, it should be like the Tom Brady thing where he read the same book over and over and over heading into a season. That's what it's there for. So if you do nothing else in life, read some more portions.
For sure.
Speaking of which, when I got my tattoo, I always think of, you know, you've got many tattoos. We've talked about this before. No baseball tattoos.
No.
I mean, be a tattoo for your friend, Tyler Skaggs. And, you know, obviously baseball, you meant.
That's baseball related.
Baseball related.
So I guess I do technically.
Yeah. But how many tattoos total?
Oh, I don't know.
What you got? Do you got any new ones?
Not recently.
Okay.
Two, three, all right. 4, 5, 6, 8. 13?
Okay. I will only have one. I will only have one.
Why? Was it too painful?
Why do you go straight there? Like, why can't we? Yes, it was. Because
most people get their first one and they're like, oh my God, I need more.
Well, I was surprised by the outpouring of sympathy where I got it, which was inside my bicep.
I have an inside bicep one too.
Yeah. So you're a good person to talk to about this then.
Mm-hmm.
How would that rate in terms of the pain meter other ones you got?
Very low.
Oh, all right.
The only spot it hurt was like armpit. Close to the armpit.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. But like, all of this was nothing.
Okay. So again, we're getting somewhere. Thank you for that. But it wasn't because it's painful. It's because I can't get another one because the guy who did it, Mr. Cartoon,
mm-hmm.
It's like, how do you get another one after getting one from him? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I had a similar dilemma. It's hard to see. This one right here.
Yeah.
I got from Dr. Wu in Los Angeles.
Okay.
He's another like very prolific, famous tattoo artist. And after that one, it was like kind of the same thing. Like, damn, how can you get another? But then in Boston, I got connected with another fantastic tattoo artist, and he's done like a lot of the ones that I got last year.
Who is that? Do you know?
Raphael. Let me shout him out. I'm gonna shout out his Instagram and everything for whoever's watching.
Yeah. Now that I'm in the tattoo community, it's very important that I.
Yeah, Rafi Barros.
Okay.
Barros.
Okay.
So it's Raph Barros Tattoos on Instagram.
Okay.
He's done like Ink Masters and things like that. He's been around the block for sure, and he's extremely talented.
So you had heard, you had heard of Mr. Cartoons before.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was a scene, man. It was, and you can probably appreciate this, is that when Joe got his baseballs and boring tattoo first, I haven't seen a reaction from a human being like that in a long time. Like it was the element of Joe knew of cartoons like for a while. He idolized him. The intricacies of it, the detail of it, the artistic nature of it. And to come out of that chair, it was just everything it was hitting. I almost feel like when I got mine, like, how do I even react? Obviously, I'm appreciative. I'm just like, yay me, I got a thing too. but, you know, I don't know if you can relate to that or not.
What do you mean? Like, Joe was like bouncing off the walls?
It was crazy.
Really?
That,
you know, that fits his personality though.
No, but you know, I saw him win a World Series. It's just like twice as excited.
That's funny.
And it's a joke. Yeah. With the Yankees too. No, but it's like, no, it was crazy. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you've had that. It's like where what I'm saying is, and we talked about this when we were hanging with Cartoons and his gang, of the relationship between having someone like a pitcher, when a pitcher is doing his craft so unbelievably well, you're like, I can't believe I'm witnessing this. I can't believe I'm seeing this. Mm-hmm. And I know that the people who don't live in the tattoo world, who haven't got tattoos or can't relate, but I'm telling you, that was his feeling. That was it. I'm getting really deep now, but so be it.
So you're talking about Joe's deep appreciation for cartoons, like intricacy and his work. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yeah. So when you say one of the ways that I put it was if someone said, I'm going to write a story on you. Right. And okay, that's great. And then they say, this is the person writing the story. And I don't know, like name the most unbelievable writer of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that this sort of it was. This is a level that people may not understand or care about, whatever, but I'm trying to paint the picture. And that for you, as someone also who has gotten tattoos from people who, meaningful tattoos from people who are at the top of the world in terms of their craft, I don't know. I'm just trying to understand the whole like world. That's what I'm doing. Now that I'm part of the world, I'm really cool. Like, that's what I'm trying to understand.
Now, have you found yourself like staring at it in the mirror a lot?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding me? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's it right there. Right when I get one and it's like good work, which I'm lucky enough to say that all my tattoos have been good work. It's like, wow, you're like looking at it. You know, when I finished in the chair with Dr. Wu for this one, the wolf, I was like just staring at it like, holy shit, for like hours, you know?
Yeah, but that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Right? And I was at the radio station and I said, oh, take a picture of me. I'm just like hanging out, like with my hands behind my head. Oh,
yeah.
What's this? A tattoo? And so then you put it on Instagram and you're like, and I just put happy ... And they're like, oh, well, people are like, what are you happy? I'm like, no, I just really just wanted to show off my tattoo.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's how I feel like this one, like the octopus.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I'm like watching him do it. And it took a little bit. It probably took like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever. And I'm watching him do it. And as you're watching it, you know, the stencil's on and everything. And it's. They're just like going like this and like, you know, moving the needle around. And it's like, you know, the ink comes up and I'm like, dude, how do you even know what you're like doing? How do you see what you're doing? And then boom, it's done. Wipe it off. And it's like, holy shit. Like it looks exactly like the stencil and better because obviously there's more depth in color and everything like that, with the actual ink. So
it's crazy. And so I'm not going to say who this was. Let's just say a major league manager that you know, after I got this done, I was out in LA we have something in common. We were in LA, in 2024 for about 24 hours, both. Mm-hmm. You were there for the World Series. I was there to get a tattoo. As I was going back, I sent this person a picture of the tattoo and they said if they won the World Series, they would also get a Baseball's a Boring tattoo.
Nice.
I mean, You can jump on the bandwagon if you want.
I just might have to.
I mean, it's a good tattoo, right? It's a good one. Just please say it's a good one. Yes, it's good.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, the one you sent me, I don't know if you showed me yours or you showed me Joe's.
Again, Joe's is just a little bit bigger, but it's the same thing. Yeah. So, all right. I appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you do, and I appreciate, that first and foremost, we've identified you as the preeminent movie critic in Major League Baseball, which we are definitely going to take advantage of. And I also appreciate you setting the record straight on internet graphics.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess like setting the record straight, but it's not a real concern. It doesn't matter. It's just, like you said, it's just internet graphics. So who cares?
I know. To the goals in 2025, let's not put so much stock in internet graphics, though.
Sure.
Let's put more stock in the art of tattoos and good podcasts. Thank you, though, for all that you do. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you, Rob.